This is the In Her Lens podcast. My name is Nadine and welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. This podcast is about centering underrepresented voices in film and TV. And this season, I'm looking into film and TV in the fight against climate change. Who is working in the field? What are they working on? And how is it impacting all of us? The film and television industry's environmental footprint is massive. The production and distribution of content consumes huge amounts of energy, generates waste, and emits tons of CO2. In 2023, Dr. Judith Kelbach was the spearhead of a study called Towards Sustainable Film Production in the Netherlands. The two-year project explored the possibilities in moving towards more sustainable film production practices in the country. It reviewed practices across Europe and the UK Albert system. It assembled focus groups with various Dutch film producers and then practically applied the theory in pilots on sets. A statistic from the study, for example, an average Dutch film emits 72 tons of CO2. That is approximately what 7 average households emit per year. Shocked yet? They provided these evaluations to the Nederlands Film Fonds, the national fund agency, who immediately jumped on the research. They then funded following steps by Dr. Kelbach and her team that led to a wide discussion and an action plan at the fund. Dr. Judith Kelbach is an associate professor in the Media and Culture Study Department at Utrecht University in the Netherlands. She received her PhD in film studies from the Freie University in Berlin, and her interests include media infrastructures, television history and theory, and the relation of media technology and historiography. She is the leader of a special interest group called Greening the Digital Society, a member of the Network for Environmental Humanities, and of the research collective Media Industries, Infrastructures and Institutions at Utrecht University. In today's episode, Dr. Kelbach tells us about her interest in the media infrastructures that produce film and television. We discuss her study at the Utrecht University, how it was structured, who was involved, struggles that they ran into, and the published impact. I ask her about the Dutch industry and its relationship to sustainability, and I question why the Dutch might be hesitant to change. We talk a lot of theory. We discuss the relationship between environmental sustainability and social sustainability, especially in an industry that is filled with project-based and freelance work. We have a more philosophical chat about ecofeminism, the awareness of the non-human, and ethics of care. Are we ready for change, like as a society? How do we hold on to hope when it seems like there is none? Where do we find it? Dr. Kelbach asks. Clearly, there's a lot of ground to cover. Thank you so much for being here. And thank you, Dr. Kelbach. So here is Dr. Judith Kelbach on In Her Lens. Hi, Judith. Welcome to In Her Lens. Thank you so much for being here and being a part of this conversation. I'm very excited to be chatting with you.
Thank you for inviting me to your really exciting podcast.
Thank you so much for saying that. So we are here quite early on the morning. Season 3 is all about climate change and film. But before we hop into anything more serious, I would like to ask you for more quick fire questions for us to get to know you a little bit better. Are you game for that?
All right. Yes, it's early in the morning. Yeah, okay.
I designed 4 questions around the seasons, kind of in line with climate. The first question is designed around spring. What is the first thing that you do in the morning when you wake up?
Have a cup of tea.
Ah, perfect. I have one on me right now. Thank you. In the summertime, I like to go out and go to concerts. If you could go to a concert tonight of any artist, living or past, who would you like to go see?
Yo La Tengo.
Oh, good one. Oh, wow. The fall question is quite simple, and I think I might know the answer already. Coffee or tea?
Oh, tea, definitely. Tea.
And the winter question is, do you have any resounding quote or a mantra that you kind of remind yourself of in your day-to-day life?
No, not at all.
No, no guiding words.
Changing, it's changing all the time.
That's fair enough. Okay. Well, you are currently based in the Netherlands, if I understand correctly, but you are from Germany. Yeah. The reason why I came across your work is because you completed a study specifically about the Dutch film industry and sustainability, titled "Towards a Sustainable Film Industry." But before we talk about that, I would love to know a little bit about you and your journey. Where are you from? Where did you grow up?
Mm-hmm. All right. So I grew up in the south of Germany. And I studied in Bochum, which is the, industrial part of Germany. There had a study program called Theater, Film and Television Studies, which was basically one of the first programs in Germany. Mm-hmm. And so I somehow focused on television studies. I don't know why. I grew up without television, so maybe this wasn't compensation. I don't know. And I then went to Berlin to do my PhD, which was in film studies, but it was a television topic, and it basically, I would say, focused on questions of representation. This was about a representation of National Socialism and the Holocaust on German, West German, I have to say, television. Mm-hmm. And then I got this job in Utrecht in the Netherlands, so I moved to the Netherlands. I learned Dutch.
which is very impressive.
Yeah, but it's not so difficult for German speaking.
That's true.
And there I was asked to do a lot of television history. And I have to say, this is the moment when I really became interested in, let's say, more media technology, infrastructures that are necessary to produce television. And this, mm-hmm. I guess, was also the moment when I started to think about production circumstances. So how do you produce big media events? How are films produced? What are the labor conditions? So these were the things that I became interested in when I started my job here in Utrecht. Mm-hmm. And I would say this is also how I somehow came to the topic of sustainability. So this mm-hmm. is not a project that I have already for a long time. So I guess this was 3 years ago, 4 years ago when I started to became interested in this topic. And it really came out of questions of production and infrastructures, basically. So I'm not mm-hmm. interested in content. So I'm mm-hmm. really not interested in, I love Cli-Fi, to read Cli-Fi, but mm-hmm. I'm really not interested in the content of movies. Or, I'm not interested is not really true. But so my focus of the research is really more production circumstances and infrastructures.
Right. And so your history is in film in terms of studying and scholarly. Would you say that you're a film scholar or more closer to like humanities scholar?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I would say more to into the humanities. Mm. So I started. So for me, like film studies is part of the humanities. Mm-hmm. Some people would say it has to do with communication studies, but I'm really more interested in these bigger questions, basically. Mm-hmm. And I guess this is also something that you see in my interest in sustainability. Mm. So this is bigger than just thinking about how can films be produced in a more sustainable way. So there are bigger questions behind that, right, which are related to how is it possible to change things, or why is it so difficult to change things? It's maybe also about consumption. So why do we need so much content, and these kinds of questions, basically?
Well, let's hop into the study. You investigated with a team. Where did the idea start? Did it start with you? Did somebody come to you with a question?
Mm. So basically, it started with, you could say, a throwaway line by somebody working in television production. Mm. Well, not even production. So this is a policymaker. And we there was a meeting, and at a certain moment they said, well, we implemented this green, we are now green, and that's great. And but then if you look into what crew and people on the work floor do, they really don't like to become greener and work in a more sustainable way. And I was like, what are you saying? So you're saying the crew resists being greener? And then he said, well, yeah, you know, these LED lights are not cozy and technicians really need to have their meat and stuff like that. So this was really a very, I found it really interesting. So what is this? What is this guy telling? Mm-hmm. And then luckily I had a master's student, so a student of our master program, film and television cultures, and she wanted to do a research internship. And so basically, and she's also, by the way, one of the people I collaborated with later in the research project. And so she became a researcher. Mm. And I asked her if she could conduct a few interviews with people in the Dutch film industry to hear what they say and think about implementing or producing in a more sustainable way. Mm-hmm. And it was extremely interesting. I mean, of course, she talked only to people who were willing to talk to her about this topic. So these are already people who are interested in sustainability, you could say. Mm-hmm. But it somehow was really interesting because she wanted to know why is it so difficult to change things and what hinders, what are the obstacles. And it turned out that it is not that people do not know enough. So they all had really great ideas what had to be changed and what could be changed and how easy it would be to change. But at the same time, none of them was willing or were willing to take responsibility. So it was always like, yeah, we could do this, but somebody else has to implement it. Somebody else is responsible for that. So let's say the caterer, you know, having freelance position, fearing that they will not get a job next time because they are then troublemakers or cause trouble because they don't want to serve meat or something like that. Mm-hmm. Said, well, somebody else has to come with this decision. Right. And the gaffer said, yeah, I would love to do that, but basically it's a decision of the producer. And the producer said, yeah, but, you know, the crew needs to do that. Or we need like orders from above that we need to produce in a more sustainable way. And the director said, yeah, I don't, you know, the sphere on set is so important, so I can't ask them to produce in a different way and stuff like that. So nobody really was willing to take on responsibility. And I found that extremely interesting. Mm-hmm. And I also think this is, well, not only in the film industry, but I think this is something that we see everywhere right now. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to take on this responsibility. And yeah, I found it super interesting. So this is basically how it started, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating, this finger pointing that's happening. I think that's what the larger conversation is so often about. It's if we talk about film, let's say, oh, is it a filmmaker's responsibility or is it policymaking that has to, who is taking responsibility for the problem that we have collectively created? Did you have a research question or how did you start forming after you conducted these interviews?
So we took these results to the Dutch Film Fonds, like a funding agency. And we said, well, listen, you need to do something with that. And so basically we agreed on a research question, which was kind of, So how can the Dutch film funds stimulate more sustainable production? That was the question. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to know what they can do. Mm-hmm. And this is what we indeed did. So it was not a 2.5 years project. Well, altogether, yes, it was. But they funded us for a year and then we needed another half year that they also financed because we had some difficulties with doing the pilot projects or studies. And so this is what the question was. So they wanted to know, so the film funds wanted to know what can they do. Mm-hmm. And so we started really with desk research. I mean, this was 2021.
I was about to say, was this like in the middle of COVID? Mm-hmm.
So the interviews were conducted before COVID. But we presented our results during COVID at the Netherlands Film Festival, 2022 and an online meeting basically. And there somebody from the film funds was there and listened. So there were also directors, producers, and they listened. And after that, it was easy for us to suggest to do this, to conduct this research, and they financed it basically. And so we started with something that you would call desk research. So we looked into what other film funds or agencies do, commissions do. So because there are already a number of film commissions who ask for reporting or implementing green measures. So we basically looked into what they do. So there are a lot of checklists and, you know, how you can reduce the impact of your movie, like environmental impact of your movie. And this is what we collected. And then we did a workshop with film producers to talk about all these measures that we collected and to talk with them. So what do you think is feasible? What would work? How would that work? So basically we discussed with them what they consider to be feasible to implement. And then we suggested that to the film funds and then tried to do our pilot studies. So we wanted to have six film productions where we implement the things that we found out. Mm-hmm. And that was rather difficult.
Right. Before we head into that, did you want to implement the same things at each of the six or no. different ones?
Okay. No, the idea was to have different ones to see what works better.
Right.
But I mean, you know, this is a very, let's say, a laboratory setting where you would say, well, it's one and the same experiment and you just experiment with different measures and then you see what works best. But of course, with film production, that is totally different because you don't have like the same conditions for one and the same program. Maybe that would be possible for, I don't know, television productions in a studio or something like that. But because these productions were so different, it's really, it's impossible to compare basically what measure is the best. It also depends on, to compare if like implementing a consultant who is, you know, just like being there if they have questions, or to implement what we called an eco-manager who is really part of the production. Yeah, of course, it is clear what makes more sense.
Right.
But then it also depends on, you know, the knowledge that producers have. I mean, imagine you have a producer who knows already a lot about sustainability. Then maybe you do not need an eco-manager because the knowledge is already there in the right. production. Mm-hmm. So, but the idea was to implement different things. Indeed.
Yeah. Okay. So there were some struggles in that. What are some findings that you did make after implementing certain things? What were the successful parts?
Mm-hmm. So I think, so what we realized is that it is important to start talking about sustainability as soon as possible. So not only when, let's say, they are about to start a production, but really in pre-production, maybe even in a screen, you know, when they discuss screenplays and stuff like that. So it was really clear. So successful are the things that the earlier start, the bigger the impact is, basically. So this is something. And then we also wanted them to work with the CO2 calculator. So mm-hmm. this asks a lot from production. So they need to put in like the kilometers they had to commute, the sort of light that they have, the sort of, I don't know, if they use diesel generators and stuff like
right.
that, which kind
right.
of food they cater and stuff. So this is a lot that we ask from them to fill that in. But it is super interesting because there you see where the potential is to reduce CO2 emissions. So yeah. you realize that, maybe not everybody needs to take their own car. maybe you can carpool, which is, of course, difficult in times of COVID, or was difficult. And these are, of course, all things that where you would say, yeah, but if you think about it, this is logical, right? Of course, it makes sense.
Yeah.
But to have that really calculated and really where you see how much the difference is, that really helped. So that people started to think about, well, maybe we could change things. Yeah.
The use of data in this conversation, it just keeps coming up again and again in the... it's almost like we need something to look at and point at for us to take it seriously in like a larger cultural sense.
And this is, by the way, also how we, I would say, managed to get this, how we convinced the film funds to give us this.
Right, which is a whole other conversation, because obviously trying to get funding for research is. Yeah.
But it was really, we needed a figure. So it was really, you know, the moment that we approached them, they said something like, yeah, but this is peanuts. You know, I mean, there are other industries that are much bigger. So the need for data was really, it was the key, I would say, that we had some data. And these data were also students who calculated it. So what is the impact of a film production in the Netherlands? And then there was a figure, 72 tons CO2 equivalent, whatever. And then they were like, oh my God, so much. We have to do something. You really needed this data, which is absurd somehow, but anyways.
Yeah, it is unfortunate that's it, but it is a harrowing statistic. I do want to talk a bit about the Dutch industry specifically. You know, it's placed among quite big international players if you want to talk about France, UK, Germany in terms of filmmaking. What have you found that distinguishes the Dutch industry at the moment from those other players when it comes to sustainability?
Well, at that time, I mean, all the other countries or industries, film cultures had already started to think about sustainability, and they were already, very advanced in implementing things. I mean, in the UK with Albert, I mean, this is really like, yeah, it's super great what they do. In Germany, they also, it's now obligatory to report CO2 emissions. So they're also much further. And I don't know exactly the situation in the US, of course, because I was more interested in the European situation. And also because of the funding situation, you know, this also helps to get a better grip on what's going on there. And also to ask, like, you know, the German film commissions, they can just ask that productions do report, and they have to do it. So there are these rules and regulations. And in the Netherlands, there was nothing like that at the time. And even now, I mean, they're starting to implement things, but even now it's not like obligatory. It's like you are allowed to do that, basically.
Right.
And of course, there's also a totally different, I mean, it's a very small industry. I mean, you know, the film industry in the Netherlands, it's super small. And this also explains a few things why they are not in place yet. And
Do you think do you understand from a humanities standpoint and culturally why the Dutch are maybe more resistant at the moment to this change?
It's funny that you say they are more resistant. I would agree. But I
I say this as a Dutch person.
I know. But I think, well, first of all, I would say, well, UK and Germany, they are bigger markets, and it's easier to implement things in the sense of, okay, you need a certain infrastructure, you need to invest in this infrastructure, and that is easier if you have a bigger market. So that is one thing. But the other thing is indeed that also when I arrived here in the Netherlands, I was really kind of amazed that certain things that were for me, I mean, of course you, you know, with garbage and trash, and of course you make sure that you have glass and plastics and stuff, and this was not really here when I arrived here. I have no idea. I guess this is a different understanding what you can do with nature, because the Dutch are remodeling nature all the time anyways, and maybe there's something about that.
Yeah, interesting. That maybe. Okay, I do think it's quite interesting to come at this subject from a humanities perspective and multiple disciplines, and this term of like action research, because I think that this is, you know, doing research, people are like, oh, we're not doing enough, but we also need, like you said, the data. What's your thought on coming from your perspective at a subject like this?
Mm. So at the moment, I really think we need action research in the sense of that research needs to have an impact. And this is something super difficult for the humanities, you know, like with social sciences and even like, you know, engineering. Of course, it is clear this all has to have an impact and societal has a societal relevance. And in the humanities, we very often had like this, yeah, there is, of course, a relation with society, but it's not like that you produce results that can be implemented in whatever policies or stuff like that. And I think this is something that's really new for people in the humanities, but I think it's absolutely necessary given the climate crisis or emergency, and things have to happen. Mm-hmm. And I mean, what I see, and this is really, it feels like a great success, is that things are indeed changing because we did this research. Right. And it also felt like in this specific case of our research, it really felt like that the Dutch Film Commission or Film Funds needed us, like mm-hmm. as an outsider. And maybe there's also some very strange idea of objectivity, or we have the knowledge or whatever, that they needed us to justify why they now can implement the things that they are implementing. And that was also very interesting. There is kind of a thinking, okay, if the university comes and gives us, you know, these reasons why we need to change things, then yes, we really need to do that. That was really interesting as an experience, that you have suddenly such a, almost, it's not power, but you have like, you can convince people easier, obviously, if you come from university, yeah. Which I found interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it is definitely where we place our value, maybe, or respect in the world, is this hierarchical power system, which is kind of what I wanted to talk about next, which you see in this situation. It's like, who do we value? But also, you know, in the film industry, there is this hierarchical power system, which unfortunately is affecting the journey of sustainability. Do you have any ideas on that?
Yes, a lot. And this is all, again, coming from the Dutch situation. But I can imagine that it is in different countries, like, not different. So what we saw is that these hierarchies and power structures really hinder the implementation of sustainability. And this has to do with who takes on responsibility, right? So people are afraid if they change, if they just offer meatless food or whatever, that they will not get their next gig again, or that they are known as troublemakers. And this has to do with a hierarchy that there are certain people in power who decide who gets the next job, for example. So, and this is the reason why they look up, you know, to the producers, for example, who need to take a decision and to define in the way how you're going to produce. And so, there is something to that. So it has to do with power structures, but it also has to do, I would say, with the work conditions and, you know, freelancing and having to make sure that you have your next job because otherwise you don't get money. Da, da, da. So all this is also part of it. I would say.
Yeah, it's a precarious industry when it comes to that subject. And like, I mean, it obviously plays out currently. There are strikes going on in the States when it comes to, you know, the writers and the actors. Also in this thing of this fear of not having work, not earning enough. And yeah, it just feels typical and really painful to find really important subjects like representation, like sustainability, fall to the wayside because of this fear of unemployment and
yeah, and, And there is also this other part of sustainability. So we are talking now the whole time about environmental sustainability, right? Mm-hmm. But you could also say there is another part to that, and that is social sustainability, which means like, okay, make sure that people don't work more than, I don't know how many hours, 40 hours in Europe, or, you know, think about how you cater how you make sure that your workers will come back again and that they don't have a burnout and stuff like that. And so there is also this connection between social and environmental sustainability that I think is very important. So one of the problems of why it is so difficult to implement things is that this needs extra work. So, you know, this has to do with there is a routine, this is how we always did it. And now if you want to change things, you need to put in extra work. You need to figure out, you need to do research, you need to figure out which is the more sustainable way. You need to find, I don't know, companies who provide the infrastructure. So this all takes time. Mm-hmm. But do you want people to overwork? Or are you able to pay people so that they can do a proper research and that they can prepare in a way that allows to produce in a more sustainable way? Huh? So this is all, there is a relation between social and environmental sustainability, I would say, that we did not manage to look into. So this is a bigger project, basically, right?
Yeah. No, I think it's interesting because we do tend to push off with any kind of like also health, and work, like working hard, and especially like coming also from acting background, like suffering is art, and like we're all very blessed to be able to do what we want to be doing. So you better work. But then this fear of like, or this danger of burnout and unsafe working conditions and all of that, that will create problems later on. But it's
exactly.
It's like walking on eggshells or something until that the drama moment happens. And that's exactly what's happening in the conversation around climate change as well in the world.
Yeah, it is exactly. And then, but you could also take it somewhere else. And maybe this is something that people do not want to hear who work in the industry, but you could also say, yeah, basically we can also talk about overproduction. So how much content do we really need? Is it really necessary to have so many shows for all these streaming platforms and so on and so on? And this is also one of the questions, right? I mean, you could start to think about that, and also how would that change labor conditions, for example, producing less, having more time to produce things in a better way.
An earlier episode on the season, I talked with a professor interested in streaming media, and that also this like kind of us overproducing and therefore having overuse of data and having all of this unused data exists in the world, and how much energy that part is costing as well, this high definition streaming that we're doing all the time.
Exactly. Yes.
I also want to talk to you a little bit about film theory and ecofeminism and feminism in the chat about sustainability in film, just because I feel like you will be a good person to talk about those things with. Now, ecofeminism specifically as a concept, for those who don't know, is, equating women and nature and the domination of women and nature in a patriarchal lens. Film theory is looking at a film in its relation to reality and the essence of cinema. And those power structures that exist in both, and kind of the domination of nature and how we see that on a screen and how that is also happening in the making of. Do you have any thoughts on this? Coming up with a whole new concept here.
Indeed. And I think for me, well, this is challenging. I think there is a difference between, let's say, such a pragmatic approach, talking about how can we change production, and what the more, let's say, theoretical, abstract, maybe even philosophical aspect of that is, which would be, well, on the one hand, feminism, but you can also say, well, being aware of the non-humans and also making sure or thinking about, okay, how can the non-human living beings be part of this discussion? You know, how do we destroy environments, and who do we destroy by that, and how do we give the non-humans a voice, basically? And I think this is something where film content can be indeed super interesting. So you see, I'm avoiding a little bit the feminist question, because I'm really not so sure about it. Also, if you look into on the level of production, if there is really something different. But so the whole question of how can you give the non-humans a voice? And there I would say content of film and television is, of course, extremely important to raise awareness. Whereas with the feminist question, and sorry, now I'm jumping a little bit
please
around.
Please do.
I think what I see, if I look in what's happening in production, I would argue, I would say that there are a lot of women who are taking responsibility for producing in a more sustainable way. But then on the other hand, we saw that not so much happened. And I have the impression that at the moment that men take over and that, let's say, it is more about technology. So which technologies do we implement and so on and so on. This is the moment when suddenly things start to change. And this is not because, let's say, approaches by female colleagues who say, well, this is about awareness, is not relevant or less relevant. But I think we still listen more to these hard arguments of technology and innovation. And then maybe there is also some, I don't know, growth involved and money to gain and stuff like that. So this is like a totally, you see, I separate somehow on the one hand, a more theoretical question, and on the other hand, to look into what's happening into practice or in
Yeah, no, just something that I've been thinking about, because in this like ethics of care that we have going on when it comes to community and accountability and all of these things and the environment, it seems like, yeah, there is still this disconjunction between what we're seeing happening and what we're doing.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you talk about ethics of care, and I feel like maybe we are not there yet. So whose ethics is this, right? And is this also, well, let's say a small group that feels like, okay, we have to change things, and either you call it activism or communal. I totally understand and hear you, but I feel like, is this really, are we already there in our society? And I mean, look into what's happening in Europe at the moment. I mean, all these ideas about green transition and how can we change and reduce emission and stuff like this. This is all taken back now, like in all the countries. And so this is what I'm kind of afraid of. So I felt like, okay, maybe there was a window when we had this idea of, you know, care and in environment and climate change, and it's possible to change anything or something. But now at the moment, what we see politically is basically totally on the contrary.
Yeah, total backtracking.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, I remember when I was in, maybe I was like 14 or something, and they said, you know, if the earth warms up like 1 degree, that's fiasco, you know? And now it's like 2.5. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, but science doesn't change. I mean, we learn more, but it doesn't change. And that's kind of the scary part, I think, also in these conversations is, yeah, this backtracking that's happening on what people are saying, or when the governments are saying, and institutions. It's not one person, but an institution.
And I have no idea how to act on that. I mean, you could either, and I also have to say, I think for me it's really difficult because, you know, students want to have hope and have like a positive, and this is super difficult for me to deal with that, because I would say we are fucked up, and I have no idea. I mean, I think this is super difficult, how to also motivate people to go on with protesting, or to think about for whom they vote, or, you know, and I'm really torn in between, I don't know, yes, you know, there are protests going on that become more and more radical, and I totally understand where this is coming from, of course. And so, yeah, I don't know how you deal with that. This is maybe also a question for you. I mean, is there hope? Where can you find hope, or how do we deal with that? So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's what I'm trying to investigate with this whole season, is trying to find the hope of people like you and other people in the sector that are trying to gain grips on some sort of what's going on in a very specific way. I think that is my new, I don't know. I would say I've become pretty cynical. I really want to be hopeful, and I really want to also, on a spiritual level, trust the things that are happening on some way, but it is very demotivating. And if I look also to who I was and who maybe a couple years older than me are in terms of that conversations versus people who are maybe 5 to 8 years younger than I am, how different we are. Mm-hmm. And my experiences, and I'm not saying that everyone's like this, but the younger generation is more cynical and more like, well, these things are happening, and we see it happen time again, and governments are not taking responsibility, or change is not happening, so nothing really matters. But also, they are very involved people, far more than maybe previous generations when it comes to conversations like this, maybe also because of the internet and how available information is and images are to us now. So I wouldn't honestly say, unfortunately, that I'm a hopeful person. But what I am excited about, I guess, is projects like this, and is steps that people are taking on in a very specific way. And I think my struggle has become a little bit like, there's so much, where do I go with this? Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many steps, little steps that people can take, but you can't take responsibility for the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe this is the big problem. How do you bring all these things together? But I mean, I agree. So for me, like, this project was indeed where I felt like, oh, this is great. You can change things, but it costs a lot of energy. And so how can you produce this kind of energy that people are still, you know, want to continue with that? And in that, I think for me, the collaboration was super important. So with
the former student. Yeah, because learning from each other, and you clearly need each other, in you can't do it alone. And if you create a research project like this, you know, yeah, you can learn from each other.
Absolutely, yeah. And to, you know, and this is more like think collectively and share responsibilities in that sense, or, you know, get the energy from what other people also do. So for me, that is extremely important. And in that sense, I would say maybe the whole digital world is a problem, because, you know, it's all like, you don't meet people anymore. And I still think it creates much more energy if you're doing things together, like physically somewhere.
I think that's true. And I think that one thing that I've always enjoyed about the art world, and I don't know about your perspective on it, is that you really need each other. It's really like people to people. It always has been like, without an audience, there is no performance. But it is changing now with what the things that we have available to us.
Indeed. Yes.
One last thing I want to ask you, for the people who are interested in research and becoming researchers, what does a day-to-day look like for you? And yeah, what are next steps when you do finish a project like this, you know? Mm.
Okay, day-to-day is like a lot of teaching. Mm. But that's really also exciting, having young people and sharing what you did in your research. It maybe sometimes it's a little bit comparable to the media industries in terms of exploitation, but because a lot of the stuff that I do in research is like free time you know, in the evenings and weekends. But this means like you go to people, you talk to people, you start to collect data, you start to write it up and to bring things together. After you finalize such a project, it always feels a little bit like, yeah, it's now it's over, it's gone, nobody cares. And so this is why it's really great to see this success that like that the Film Fonds now is implementing stuff. And well, actually, I'm now thinking of preparing a project that is on a European level. So where you we think about, okay, what do other countries do and how is this comparable? And yeah, we are just trying to take that to the next level at the moment.
Yeah, that's so exciting. Thank you very much. I really am excited about this conversation. And thank you for the very specific research that you did, because it did affect the world that I live in. And I'm very grateful for that.
Thank you. And also thank you for sharing this on your podcast.
Of course.
Thank you so much for joining us, and a massive, massive thank you to Dr. Kelbach for fielding all of my questions and for being so willing and open to discuss and theorize on a couple. I really appreciate you and all the work that you've done. All of the studies are linked in the episode notes for you to check out. If you'd like to support this podcast, there is one thing that you can do, and that is hit the follow button. If you'd like to get notified of next week's episode, then you also have to hit the little bell. It's the way that we get onto the charts and get these conversations into people's ears. You can always join the conversation on Instagram at In Her Lens Podcast. And I'll be back next week with another really exciting episode. Thank you so much for being here, and I'll see you there. Bye.